Hello there, ladies and gentle plebs. Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Academy, brought to you by the Plan B Network and Bitbox. This is our course on my second book, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined. I'm Knut Svanholm, and I'm here, as always, with Luke DeWolf. Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
Good morning, Knut. Enjoying life, enjoying being a Bitcoiner. All is good. And excited for today's episode. This one is called Violence and Silence. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, we've been on a bit of a tour here before this. We've been to Bulgaria and Lugano, and I also went to Prague for a short while. And now we're back and recording more Academy stuff. So this is going to be good.
Absolutely, it is. And just a reminder that the best way you can get involved and support the show is to go to our Geyser page, geyser.fund/project/infinity, and sign up for the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. You can join either an individual course or sign up for the full package with our Mithril Adamantium membership. All the details are there. You can enjoy the live recordings if you want to join our discussion group, a whole bunch of other things. So just check that out. And now I think let's dive in.
Absolutely.
All right. Violence and silence. Around the time that these words were written, a protest fund worth around $70 million intended for the protesters of Hong Kong was frozen over money laundering by HSBC, acting under pressure from the Chinese government. Not your keys, not your Bitcoin is, despite what anyone might believe or wish for, just as true for the traditional banking system as it is for Bitcoin. Credit card companies, banks, and even internet providers have immensely powerful tools for shutting people up at their disposal. Most of them are, fortunately, very reluctant to use these tools most of the time, but only because of the damage to their reputation misdirected freezing of someone's funds could lead to. When not asked but ordered by a powerful enough authority to do so, most of them won't blink before ruining someone's life because of an alleged connection to terrorism. All right. Some interesting stuff, and we've had more examples of this particular issue since the time of writing.
Yes, this is somewhat forgotten, but it was pretty bad down in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong was to be British for 50 years, right? And then the Brits were supposed to give it back to China, and that's what happened. And that's what people were protesting about, because they didn't want to live in the People's Republic of China. And also, in the People's Republic of Canada, there was this trucker protest a couple of years after this. And so this is written before that, but it's an example of the same thing. The money in the bank is not yours. In fact, it's not money at all, but credit. Someone owes that money to someone else at all times, because it's printed out of thin air and issued as debt. So as long as you have the money in the bank, you are not in the driver's seat of your life. It's just impossible. Cash is a bit better. It can be inflated into oblivion, of course, but it's still uncontrollable in the sense that you can use it without anyone interfering with your usage of it. And by use, I mean as a medium of exchange. In the bank, however, the CBDCs are in a sense already here. They can stop you. They can freeze your account and stuff. By the way, today I read news that the European CBDC thing, Lagarde's wonderful little hobby project there, is postponed. There might be some trials in 2027, but the whole thing won't happen until 2029. So, yeah, I'm very happy that bureaucracy is a slow process, because maybe we have the time still to stop this thing from happening. I think enough people are against it. They're, of course, going to roll it out with some carrot attached to it, like get 300 free euros or something if you sign up now. And people shouldn't. This is surveillance, and it's social engineering at its worst. Programmable money means programmable people. So resist at all costs. We don't want Europe to become China.
Very well put. I don't have really much of anything to add to that. We talked quite a bit, I think, last time or some other context, maybe I can't remember, about how the fiat system now is already quite onerous. You have to explain all of the money going into your bank account, even if it's cash, and you have to get permission to take out as much cash as you want, whatever. So yeah, Bitcoin providing a way out of that, and Bitcoin being used as money and a way out of the fiat financial system is absolutely what I'm here for. And Bitcoin being this uncensorable medium of exchange, that's it. That's the thing that's going to change the world for the better.
Yeah, and just think about the vulgarity of the bank controlling your money. I mean, you own the money, like on paper at least. Theoretically, you own the money, but in reality, they do. And think about how bizarre that is. Like, I mean, you're funding them. The bank wouldn't be anything without people putting money into the bank and taking out loans from the bank. They are dependent on you, and over the decades, they've been able to morph themselves into owning all your shit. So, yeah, I say that a lot, but a bank account is a 2 out of 3 multisig between you, the bank, and the government. And they have the master keys, and you always need the other two's permission. And it's absolutely vulgar, because it's not their stuff. You cannot claim that you own your money if you need permission from someone else to use it. Then that's why Bitcoin is the only type of money that you can own, because it's permissionless. That's such an underrated aspect of it.
Love it. Let's continue and dig deeper. Of all the numerous forms that governments have taken over the centuries, of all the concepts and institutions that have been tried, none has succeeded in keeping the state in check, Murray Rothbard once concluded. Regardless of your opinion on the legitimacy of the state, it is undeniably very risky to grant any institution this kind of power over people. You might like your government now, but if the other side wins the next election, you might not be too happy with a system that automatically grants them power over people's lives of this magnitude. The creepy thing about letting a third party decide what rules apply at what point in time and to whom is that the system might function perfectly fine until the day that it suddenly doesn't. You can't see it coming. That's the scariest part. Yeah, so some commentary about the political system here.
Yeah, and the slippery slope that it is. Even without inflation, it's a slippery slope, because you're letting other people decide what's best for you and giving power away to someone else. Like, taxes is basically the idea that someone else is better at spending your money than yourself. And it's baffling to me how many people think that that is a good idea. But the whole notion of the free lunch and why politicians are so good at claiming that they're better at spending it than you are, it's because of the money printing, because they sneakily grab onto more power by printing more money, and therefore it seems like they can provide the public with more and more free lunches, when in reality they're just stealing from your kids. And it's such a vile, vulgar system. And unfortunately, it seems like every single democracy is headed this way. Or any other form of government as well, even more unfortunately maybe. But so the only solution is to take matters into your own hands and actually opt out. The most important tool is of course Bitcoin, but Nostr and other freedom tools are super important as well. The more you opt out, the more you help humanity forward. It's egotistical, and may seem egotistical to opt out and not do your part, but it's actually not. It's the opposite. It's actually helping the world become a better place, because what you're doing if you're in the systems and if you're financing these people is that you're the one behind the wars, you're the one behind the surveillance, you're the one behind, you're funding it all. So like, the best slogan the left ever came up with was defund the police. Yes, I can totally agree with that. And not your body, my body, my choice is a good one too. Like, you don't get to tell me what to do with my body, including my property, which is an extension of my body. Like, defund all of this shit. Just opt out. We'd all be better off.
Yeah, and I mean, I can devil's advocate one aspect of this, only sort of half-heartedly, but the individuals will still need security together, because there are people who like to do bad things, and it's not always possible to defend against that as an individual. Therefore, I do see that there will be a world with private police forces, security forces, maybe is the better word, or groups of private cities joining together with some kind of common defense pact or something like this. We're not going to get rid of violence. Maybe we drastically reduce it, but there's always going to be assholes. But everything you're saying here is that the caveat I have to that is that making it all voluntary, having the means to opt out is what's currently lacking right now. You have to buy into everything in your jurisdiction. It's not optional. And the whole point about that, if you give one side power when they're in power, then the other one can do it back to you. And that's just an escalating game until one side decides that they're seizing the means of production, and then that's over. Or, you know, the Reichstag fire or whatever it is, just to give an example from both sides. So it's definitely that the escalating increase in the power of the state is the problem, and directionally aiming towards less is what I want. I don't know that we're going to land on no state whatsoever, but less is generally better. That's what I agree with.
Yeah, I mean, the Rothbardian take here, and the one which I agree with, by the way, is in the definition of the state. Like, the state is by definition a criminal organization. So as long, like, people think that libertarianism means you can do whatever the fuck you like, and that's not at all what it's about. It's about respecting property rights. It's about the non-aggression principle. So you're not allowed to, like, violence is okay if it's in defense, if it's about defending your body and your property from others. Rothbard, like, this is also what differentiates Rothbard from Mises, because Mises believed in the minimal state and just taking care of defense. But Rothbard pointed out that why is defense not just another good on the free market? Why wouldn't that also be better solved by free market competition and voluntarism, consensualism? Because the problem becomes when it's mandatory and like pushed onto people what kind of defense insurance to buy, is that there is no mechanism for deciding how much insurance to buy. So, for instance, in the Israel-Palestine war, every time the Palestinians shoots up a rock, which costs them maybe $100 to shoot the rock with some explosives from a metal pipe, then Israel's drone defense system goes on and it costs them $500,000 every time. So there's a ton of fucking resources being wasted for seemingly no good. Not commenting anymore on that particular war. I'm not refusing to go there. I'm just saying that using this as an example of a forceful system always has the problem of not having correct price signals. So they don't know. In an enforced system, in a coerced system, there is no way of knowing what the market actually wants. And there will always be wasted resources. And this is why I love Rothbard, because he points out so clearly why individual choice and voluntarism, consensualism, is always better at allocating resources, because you just skip the waste part.
Sure. Still, there's a difference between the ideal world and the real world, and it's not necessarily always going to be possible that we land on a place where we can have an entirely voluntarist and consensualist society. Getting as close to that as possible is what I want.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to admit that we will never live in such a world. There will always be aggression. However, for me, this is more than a political stance. It's just a way to view the world. Just admit what is and what isn't a crime, and categorize it correctly. But there's nothing like a fee for living in a place where a group of people have collectively decided that if you want to live within these borders that we co-own, because we consensually decided to co-own them, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The violation there, or the aggression there, would be to charge a fee if someone was to move from that place. So as long as you can voluntarily leave, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fees or voluntary taxes, if you will. Like, so It all boils down to property rights, and it's pretty simple. Is it consensual or not? That's the basic question.
Very good. I think we should continue. People in power very seldomly give up that power willingly. While this observation may seem obvious, it is less obvious what power truly is and where it truly resides. Voters seem to miss the target all the time and keep on voting for parties that suggest that giving politicians more power is a good idea. Regardless of where on the right-left spectrum the parties of most democracies today land, they all want themselves to have more power over other people. The right-wingers become more and more conservative rather than libertarian, more protectionist and nationalistic than pro-free trade, and so on. The left-wingers are, well, left-wingers, so they naturally want to increase taxes and control people's finances to a greater extent. Not to mention their self-harming tendency to focus on more and more cosmetic issues, like the political agenda du jour of the social justice movement. Deregulation, less governance, fewer taxes, free speech, and more personal responsibility are values that almost no politician rallies behind any longer. Furthermore, there's a tendency among the political class and the old media houses to hide their pompousness by introducing vague terms to mislead the public, such as the political compass, filter bubbles, and various distortions of the term common values. There's a strong connection between their not-so-subtle joint effort agenda, pushed by established media and politicians, and the recent rise in distrust of politicians in general. After the internet came along and provided alternatives to whatever political opinions the establishment wanted to promote, political brainwashing machines have started to creak in their joints. All right. Yeah, that's a pretty full-throated attack on the political system. Just intensifying, basically.
Yeah, it's one of the paragraphs I'm proud of. This is a good one. Yeah, it's, once again, whether it's the left or the right, try to recognize what is and what isn't aggression, and why they're doing the things they're doing. And the two-party system is really a one-party system. And same in Europe, we have like 8 parties in every country, but there's always a left and a right side. And the differences between them are so small that it doesn't matter. The bureaucracy is still there. If you look at what they're actually spending money on, the budgets are just enormous, and they differ very little from one side to the other. And I can't remember the last time I heard anyone within the established political system, at least not in Sweden, actually argue for lower taxes overall. Everyone wants to promote this or promote that, meaning they want to spend more money on this or that. So there's no difference. There's directionally, there is no political power that wants to make the state smaller. And that just shows that the system is broken, that democracy does not work as intended. It does not protect you. It does not respect property rights the way it ought to do. So I just find it tragic. And this is why I chose to opt out of as much things as possible about a decade back. And it's why more and more people choose to do so. Like, don't tread on me, FFS.
Yeah, I like that you said that democracy isn't working as intended. I think one of the things here is that people who still haven't got this think that they have good intentions in mind and that it's a good thing to let everyone have their voice and decide. But the masses don't really make good decisions together, and certainly not when the political systems are rigged the way that they are. Most democracies are set up in such a way that it's incredibly trivial to just make it so that the outcome that the establishment wants happens, whether it's by deciding who gets the funding or the media rights or whatever it is, and putting specific voting rules in place, such as electoral districts or some kind of proportional representation system, which never results in any one power getting anywhere. I mean, I actually should like the forms of democracy that are super inefficient because they never get anything done. Because, well, they never get anything done, and they can't increase their power quite so quickly. But yeah, it's a dilemma, and I think the problem is, and the gotcha that actually is kind of true is, what are we going to replace it with? But replacing it with uncensorable money and not caring about what's going on in the the democratic world, that's not a bad start. But it's just, where do we go if we remove democracy? That's the question, right?
Maybe the word intended was wrong here, and it's more like not functioning as advertised, because maybe it is functioning as intended. Yeah, that's a common question I get with, like, what do you replace it with? Just free market. And no, it's not about replacing, it's about removing. You don't replace a tumor, you remove it. Like, that's the idea here. The fallacy lies in thinking that the market, the state provides goods, just as the free market. But as Hoppe points out, like, the states compete in providing bads rather than goods. Something decided by a central planner can never be is always more wasteful than something decided by the free market, because there's no price signal. All kinds of interventionism does this to the free market process. The free market is a process. It's the process of people doing things with consent, like doing things because they believe that the thing they do will bring them value. So, and central planning is not. It's just one guy's opinion. Hey, that's just your opinion, man. Another thing that comes to mind reading this paragraph is the Osho meme, that Indian guru guy that says the democracy is for the people, by the people, of the people. But the people are retarded. And yeah, that's just the first problem.
Yes, exactly. I think we should move on here, but I certainly agree with all of these points, and we'll continue to explore them in future books and chapters. Moving on. Hate speech is a term obviously coined by someone who hated speech. Nothing is as important to a society as free speech, and as discussed earlier, the only alternative humans have to speech when it comes to resolving conflict is violence. When lawmakers try to treat the symptoms of a societal problem with political band-aids such as hate speech laws, they not only fail to address the root cause of the problem, but undermine the very system that is protecting the victimized minority that the new law is supposedly designed to protect. Not only that, but they also cement the old groupthink that labels people with categorizations that an unbiased society isn't supposed to take into consideration. Diversity is a term commonly used to describe everything except what truly needs to be diverse in a society, namely people's opinions. Instead, the word is used to describe cosmetic traits, such as skin color, gender, age, or sexual preferences. Governments all around the Western world brag about their diverse parliaments, focusing only on the superficial, whilst pushing a more and more unified political agenda. Anyone who dares to question if politicians and journalists are really qualified to conjure up solutions to supposed climate problems, for instance, is labeled a conspiracy theorist and anti-science. For anyone who has read any dystopian fiction in general, and Orwell in particular, the alarm bells should have sounded a long time ago. Yeah, my initial takeaway here is just the elites dictating what is and what is not acceptable, and we are pushing back.
Yes, we are. I probably would have added a couple of caveats here if I was to write this today, because I've saying that free speech is the most important thing. It's true in a sense, but I'd say that that property rights are more important. Because free speech, where is the question that everyone forgets to ask themselves. Of course, there is no free speech in my house because I decide who gets to say what in my house. If you come into my house, if I invite you into my house or my property and you call me a dickhead, then I will probably kindly ask you to leave. And if you keep on calling me a dickhead, I will force you to leave. And that's how it's supposed to work. Like, the only reason we need free speech laws at all is because someone took someone else's property. So it's only needed in so-called public spaces. This is what so many people get wrong with this whole thing. It's not about speech itself and protecting everyone who wants to say all sorts of bullshit. It's about property rights, much more than that. So if I own a social media platform, for instance, I get to dictate the rules, and there's nothing wrong with that. If I want to compete with other social media platforms that allow more speech, then it's probably a bad thing for me to censor people. So the platform that allows more free speech will be more successful, as seen with X the last couple of years, since Elon took over. Then again, there are other systems to use, such as Noster, where my speech cannot be very easily censored because it goes through all sorts of relays and all sorts of individuals, and it's not on one specific server somewhere. All of these tools are great, and we need them to express ourselves. Like I've been saying many times in these books and elsewhere, humans have two means of resolving conflict over scarce resources. One is aggression and the other is communication. And civilization is the communication way, like it's arguing about resources and not fighting over them, not trying to take them from someone else. So that's why speech is so important, and that's why we need it to be able to express our opinion to one another unbiased and without threats of violence. There's something about privacy here to be mentioned too. Like if you cannot be private with your communication, you will say other things. If you know that the world is listening, you'll probably change your speech somewhat. So interference is the problem, as usual. Intervention is the problem. If property rights were more respected, then everything would be better. And yes, Bitcoin fixes this because Bitcoin is just information. Owning a private key is just knowing it, and that changes the game completely. It allows you to do as you please to a greater extent. And the same is true for a private Noster key. When you have it, you can put your message out there, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, lots of great points there. The first one here is that Noster actually isn't any different from the centralized platforms. But the real difference is that as you say, you go through so many different things. Like, for example, Primal can decide to not show someone or can decide that they've got an algorithm that is this or that, but you can use a different client such as Iris or Domus or something like that. And so that's the competition that keeps Noster kind of in check. You can also have relays that explicitly say we're only going to let certain types of content in, but then there are others that are completely open. Noster is great. And the thing about the more centralized social media platforms and all this, like it's totally true. The issue with the centralized social media platforms is that the state got involved. Like the Twitter files from a couple of years back, from a couple of years before that, is even a showing that the government was trying to censor specific things, and then it pulls it all the way back to the hate speech thing. Like, honestly, those who try to control are the ones who say that your opinion is not acceptable. They don't try to address the opinions itself. They fling insults and they call you a Nazi. And frankly, I think that there's something too that they don't call people Nazis because they're Nazis. They call people Nazis because they want to kill them. Like they want to call people Nazis and give themselves the permission to silence the other side. It's really quite terrible. This was definitely the thing that first kind of got me into these circles, was all the cancellations and the hate speeches and everything. It never made sense to me.
The beauty of it, though, is that the free market is a stronger force than any interventionism can be. Like we do evolve. It's like Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park, right? Life finds a way. We will find a way to route around all the bullshit. That always happens. The good forces are stronger than the bad ones. The dark side of the force will not win this one. And I truly believe that because it's so much more powerful than people think it is. Yeah, and not being a Nazi is easy. Don't be a nationalist, don't be a socialist. Then you're not a Nazi. Like, drop those and you're fine.
Yes, and perhaps people should stop calling people Nazis if they don't fit either definition, basically. Okay.
Let's go with fascist instead.
Yeah. Sure, something like that. Moving on. Anyone who wants to be able to freely express his or her opinions in the future would be wise to act sooner rather than later. Your top priority should be to secure your financial freedom, because without it, you're on a leash, and you have no reliable guarantees whatsoever. Money is a linguistic tool we use in order to express value to each other. And at this point in time, there is no nation on Earth where people's ability to use money unhindered is protected by free speech legislation. Bitcoin in particular should be protected by free speech laws, since Bitcoin is entirely made up of computer code and mathematics. If a law hinders you from expressing mathematics, you can instantly discard that law book as deeply immoral. Right now, this holds true for most law books in existence. This is not to say that anyone should actively break the law or not, just to emphasize that being moral is one thing and following the law another. Think hard and deep about where you stand on these issues. Chances are that there's nothing you can do about the society you were born into, but quite a lot you can do to increase your personal independence. Yeah, on this one, I mostly just go to that Bitcoin enables the way out. That's it.
Yeah, and this is hinting at the difference between legal and lawful, which we go in depth into in both Praxeology and Clown World, I believe. And I mean, yeah, regardless of if Bitcoin's code is protected by the law or not, it's still unstoppable. So it doesn't really matter if one jurisdiction bans it or puts up hinders in the way, as long as every other country on Earth can keep running their nodes. And it's very dangerous if suddenly the state gets to dictate what a node is and what it isn't. That's a very slippery slope. So this is why I'm conflicted about if I want pro-Bitcoin politicians or anti-Bitcoin politicians. I think that they're both good for Bitcoin in their own ways, but it can be hard to see why an anti-Bitcoin politician would be good for Bitcoin. But it's just to say that mixing Bitcoin and politics is a very dangerous thing, because it is a slippery slope. And when they get to dictate what is and what isn't Bitcoin, then we're... Yeah, that's an attack vector in my mind.
Definitely. And yeah, it's a funny thing here that tying Bitcoin to the free speech laws, basically. And I mean, what's kind of nice is that it seems to be holding up, that there really isn't anything that is considered illegal threat to Bitcoin at this point. Of course, there always could be, but I think the main idea here is that Bitcoin is permeating so many facets of society that it's almost becoming mainstream. And again, you can debate the pros and cons of that, but I think hyper-Bitcoinization is going to be bumpy, and it isn't going to be exactly like this, the plebs taking back the power. It's going to be a struggle as mainstream institutions adopt it as well, and nation states adopt it. And we come back to this power struggle. How do you take power away from this state that attempts to grow itself infinitely? But as long as the individual is able to use Bitcoin in a sovereign way, then we're okay.
Yeah, and to... Like, what might be more important than the laws themselves are people's opinions about them. When, like, the First Amendment, for instance, the one about free speech, freedom of speech, that people have that in their minds. That's one of the reasons that they like America and want to live there, like the U.S. So if there's an obvious case of some institution trying to meddle with that, then there will be a public opinion will be against that, probably. So in that sense, in the popular opinion sense, it's very hard to say that Bitcoin isn't speech, because it's just ones and zeros.
Sure. And I think the funny thing is free speech laws in general are kind of weird, like
oxymoronic.
yeah, exactly. Like it's sort of just defending the ability to think and have autonomy over one's body. They're sort of redundant in a way. Like the whole thing about free speech laws having limits, such as not being able to yell fire in a movie theater and not being able to incite violence, those are the things that are kind of talked about here. It's vague. Like if you cause someone else to do harm through your speech, that's a bit of a weird little area, but yeah, everything else, like the marketplace of ideas, that's it. The argument was made that hate speech is in the category of things that incite violence, basically. But yeah, I don't even really know where I'm going with this. It's just more like free speech is important, but it's also not, it can be derived from other things, I think.
hate speech is a very slippery slope. Like, why would it matter to the victim what the motives of the perpetrator was? Like, you can draw that to its extreme. Like, yeah, accidentally killing someone should probably not be punished as harshly as deliberately murdering someone. But still, the victim is still dead. It doesn't matter to the victim. Like, and the same thing goes for hate crimes and all of this stuff. Like, as soon as you start categorizing like that, then we're not all equal to the law. And that's the only equality that matters, by the way. Like, equality towards the law is the only type of equality that is actually fair.
Sure. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think we should continue. While you're at it, think about taxes. Think about who really pays them. Businesses need to be profitable in order to survive. So whenever a business is taxed, they will have to raise the prices of their products and services. Therefore, it is always the consumer that ultimately pays the tax. This is true for every tax there is. VAT and sales tax, for instance, are just a small part of the total amount of taxes that raise the price of a product, ultimately paid by the consumer. The employees of the company producing said product are probably paying income taxes, forcing their employers to pay them higher salaries. Employees also live in houses and have to pay real estate taxes, which ultimately forces the business owner to pay them more. Not to mention that the company itself needs to be physically located somewhere. A real estate tax is supposed to be a taxation of property owners, but in reality, it's always the consumer who pays the bill in the end. The tenant will have to pay rent, and if there's a real estate tax on the property, the owner will have to charge the tenant a higher monthly price. All taxes ultimately punish the consumer, either through higher prices or a smaller supply of products to choose from. Prices can't be raised indefinitely, and some companies go out of business instead, lessening the competition between the remaining market actors and punishing the consumer even more. The taxes collected might be used for things a consumer would want anyway, like healthcare or education, but always through a process more ineffective and more expensive than that which a truly free market would provide. In a truly free market with sound money, the division of labor mechanisms of that market would give us close to zero marginal costs for all products, while at the same time disincentivizing people from overconsumption. True sustainability instead of mere buzzwords. Yeah, we ended at the a bit abruptly, but a nice discussion of taxes there and the result for consumers.
Yeah, I mean, the end point there is, the point made at the end of the chapter is, of course, that the true nature of the free market is deflation. When people practice doing stuff, they get better at stuff, so all prices should be dropping forever. But this about taxes, like, if there's anything to add to this, I'd say that subsidies are just as bad as punishing taxes, like point taxes on certain things. Whenever a government subsidizes something, like solar panels, for instance, or electric cars, and they punish other things, such as gasoline cars or petrol cars, if, for you Brits out there, then what happens, what inevitably happens is that resources get misallocated because people do not get what they want. And what this means in the end is higher prices for everyone. So it's less prosperity. All, it cannot not lead to less prosperity. The misallocation of resources is the problem. And money printing, what that does is it incentivizes everyone to consume more and more because the prices are going up. So you're incentivized to consume sooner rather than later. In other words, having a higher time preference. If there's any threat to any environment anywhere on Earth, this is the biggest problem by far. People over-consuming. Like if we had sound money, money that went up in purchasing power over time, which we do, then we consume less. All the Bitcoiners I know go from their fiat lifestyle, which is usually buying a ton of crap, to a more stoic worldview and buying less crap. The Lambos and all of that, that's for the crypto space, which is, in my opinion, is peak fiat. And you can, you know, look like a camel and buy dorky shoes. But Bitcoiners aren't like that. The true Bitcoiners I know are much more monk-like and don't crave frivolous shit. But sure, we live comfortable lives, but we don't buy shit we don't need. And that solves all the environmental problems.
Yeah, the whole issue is just ridiculous. And we've talked about this before, but the taxes upon taxes upon taxes is just such a ridiculous issue. Whenever I see the government raising this tax or another in order to gain a little bit more revenue, like all I see is that, yeah, it's just making things worse for everyone. And I think that's actually one of the key points here, is that whenever the government raises a tax to get more revenue to do something, they're simply doing a misallocation. They're simply distorting the market, and it could have been done better through a free market. They're mandating that something gets done, and they're raising funds by increasing consumer prices in order to do it. Now, there are some taxes that are more stupid than others. For example, corporate tax is silly. In my view, tax on corporate profits shouldn't exist because it gives the corporations the incentive to spend as much as possible in order to avoid the tax bill, which means that the corporations go out of their way to do all of this inane bullshit just so that they won't have to pay as much, and they're incentivized to spend now rather than later. And so and then everything still gets pushed to the consumer because they have to make a profit anyway. VAT is similar because it raises the tax primarily on those who are least able to pay it. VAT and sales tax basically just says that, well, you're punished for having to buy stuff. And the people who have to buy stuff are the people who are basically only spending their money on food and basic necessities. I can go on and on and on here. But the thing is, simplifying the tax system would be extremely helpful in order to actually show what is really going on. Because the real tax rate is, I don't know, over 90%, because money gets taxed over and over and over again. The same money gets taxed. Say you get taxed when you're paid the income tax. You get taxed when you pay the tax bill on your house. You get taxed when you pay for the thing in the supermarket. You get taxed when you try to give it to someone. You get taxed when you try to give it to the person you're inheriting to. You get taxed when you try to leave. It's just so cumulative. It's so cumulative and over the top here. There's an interesting movement now called Georgism, and it's basically the idea of land value tax, replacing all taxes with land value tax. And I didn't hear about it through this Georgism thing. I heard about it initially from Dominic Frisby in his book Daylight Robbery. Yeah, actually a very, very good book about all the bads about taxation. But he basically lands on that he thinks in that book that a land value tax is the most fair tax, and replacing everything with that would be much better. And I can kind of get there, that this would be a good intermediate step, is to shift gradually to one tax only, and then you see exactly what the cost is of that. And the governments just have to deal with less and less, and not taxing money every time it moves. But of course, my end goal is that, yeah, get rid of taxes, replace it with fees, because something resembling a government is going to have to operate in places with a natural monopoly geographically. But voluntarism, only do it if you want to, not have it be mandatory, not have the monopoly on violence. That's what I think, basically.
Yeah, like it. Regardless of the validity of Dominic's idea there, good luck getting it through. Like it suffers from the same problem as every other thing. Like the people in power are not going to give up that power. That's the problem. So the only tool you have as an individual in your toolbox is to opt out of as many of these systems as possible. Yeah. And also, calling a tax rate a percentage is slightly misleading, because we're missing the exponential growth that could have happened hadn't the tax been there. So we're deprived of so much more than we think we are, because it's not a linear thing. You can't really call it a percentage, since you're missing something, a pie that would have been, it's not a percentage of a pie, because the pie itself would have been way bigger had the tax not been there. So this is why it's so vile. And yeah, I'd like, the best way I know of delivering the orange pill instead of the orange suppository is to ask the absolute simplest question. And when it comes to taxes, it's like the first question I ask people is, why do people in the public sector pay taxes? And there is no other reason than to keep up the facade, keep the theater going. Because why would they pay taxes if they're paid by taxes? It makes absolutely no sense. And the only reason is to cover up the fact that they are a cost and not a benefit. I wouldn't even call them adult in that sense, because they're not taking care of their own lives. They're living off of other people's productivity. So this is not to bash every person in the public sector, because you were born into this system and most people have just not figured out how fraudulent it is. But it's a good question to ask yourself. And the other question is, of course, why are the taxes at all if they can print money? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. So it should be either or, right? Either you have taxes or you print money. Why both? And of course, back to the original question, why do prices go up if we get better at doing stuff? Like, all of these things are true. It's just that people never reflect over these things, even though they're so basic. So yeah, it's vile. And I think the biggest thing here is that people are unable to see the path not taken. It's back to Bastiat and the seen and the unseen. We don't know how much better we would have had it had there been no taxes. Like, it's impossible to see, because we do not experience the exponential growth that could have happened. And I think that's why I'm so insanely bullish on Bitcoin and much more optimistic than the average Joe, because I don't see this as a switch to another linear system. This is a switch to something completely different, a true utopian future. Without exaggeration, I try to debunk myself all the time about this, but I truly believe it's a way bigger societal change than people can even imagine. They're just scratching the surface if they think that it will solve a single issue. Like, it solves everything.
Yeah, the TLDR and the bottom line on this particular thing is that Bitcoin is the way out. And, you know, I've just been thinking a little bit about what is the point of even this academy thing. And we've often talked about ourselves as being conviction deepeners. But I think if you're here listening and following along with us and learning and wanting to grow and go deeper, it's not just conviction deepening. These are tools in the toolbox of helping your friends and family to come onto this particular train and adopt Bitcoin and opt out. And, you know, I think these ideas are just over and over and over again. It's Bitcoin is the way out, and Bitcoin helps to create a better future. That's what I'm here for.
And the state is the enemy.
Something like that. I think this has been a great episode. Anything more to add about this one?
Not really. It's hammering in the points. I still love talking about this stuff with you, Luke, and with everyone else too, for that matter. But I think I'm looking forward to dissecting even more of this stuff. And later on, we get into the deeper stuff. This academy is slowly but surely getting there, and we'll explore all the ideas, and it's going to be great.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I think we should just give a shout out to our friends at Plan B Network. We were just in Lugano, which was amazing. They have a fantastic new POW.space or proof of work space there now. There's so many exciting things going on with the Plan B organization in general, and Plan B Network with their educational initiatives. It's just so awesome to be a part of. Go check out planb.network if you want to see all of the educational resources they're putting together and the communities that they're building. And we're just so happy to be a part of it, and thrilled to have them as a partner in the Bitcoin Infinity Academy.
Yeah, and we recorded a live episode that we streamed on Rumble. So we'll do that, a proper version of that episode too. But if you want a sneak peek, there's a version of the one-shot principle, which is the most famous chapter from Independence Reimagined. So you can go and check that out if you want to. Also, we'd like to give a shout out to Bitbox, our favorite hardware wallet. Don't we, Luke?
Yes, absolutely. They've released the BitBox Zero 2 Nova Edition, which is an upgrade on their BitBox Zero 2. It's got a secure chip that has a bunch of certified security features, so you can know that your Bitcoin is safe. And they've added iOS compatibility, which means that you can use it on whatever device you want. Check it out. Go to bitbox.swiss/infinity, and you can get our discount and help support the show that way.
Fantastic. So tune in next time. Don't miss the Bitcoin Infinity show. Brush your damn teeth, like and subscribe, all of that. And see you next time.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. Thanks for listening.